some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a card flopping favorite.
That it is. And this week we are talking about the Dark Souls card game, created by Steamforged Games and released initially in 2018.
Indeed. Yeah, we're all in that weird space before Elden Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Join us.
Join
you're trapped
us.
In here with us. Motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Near
the at the end of this episode, we'll announce what we're doing between now and Elden Ring as well.
Mm-hmm.
So people can play along and the like. Pretty excited about it.
Same.
I think it's some good stuff. That tank of Souls-like stuff that we're interested in has more or less run dry, so we need an Elden Ring for a bunch of stuff to come through and for me to want to feel like playing The Surge 2 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So until then, though, we're doing something that people have asked about a few times.
Yeah.
Talking about one of the physical adaptations of Dark Souls. But we're talking about the card game. We skipped the board game and we'll talk about why.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. Because this game is weirdly like a distillation of the board game.
It's just a better version of it.
Yes. To me. Absolutely.
You don't get the cool minis.
Right.
You know, but it is a better version of it.
Yeah, it is a game that I can see myself playing. Whereas we'll talk about what's wrong with the board game. This was kind of part of the big marketing push around Dark Souls 3. Mm-hmm. The base game is based on Dark Souls 3. One of the expansions is based on Dark Souls 1, gives you those DS1 mm-hmm. bosses. But this base game, it comes with two exploration boards and four bosses.
Yep. And four classes.
Right.
This is published by Steamforged
mm-hmm.
Games. This came out in 2018. I played it for the first time last year.
Okay.
So it's been out for a while.
Yeah.
But I saw like a deal mm-hmm. on it and saw it on sale.
Yeah. I saw that it came out, and then I saw that it was Steamforged, and I remembered back in the Kickstarter for the board game. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
They are a do not trust on site kind of deal for me.
Yeah. And along those lines, just as a quick note, to head off anybody asking, I have played the Bloodborne card game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love it. But I have not played the board game. I have the board game. My mm-hmm. friend Levi gave it to me, and it's good for solo play. I just have not set it up and played it yet.
Yeah.
So maybe if I do that, I'll just mention it offhand in some episode to get my impressions. But I just haven't played it yet. I've heard that's real good.
Yeah. I'm real curious.
Out of all four products, this might be the best. That might be the best one.
Yeah, I'm real curious about the Bloodborne board game based on what I've seen, like, you know, YouTube reviews and kind of stuff. It kind of seems to sidestep some of the issues with the Dark Souls 3 board game. Yeah.
Yeah. Playing a solo board game, it's worth noting why we finally got around to this as well, in part because it is solo
mm-hmm.
play, or it can be.
Yeah.
And that's really, like, to me, a very specific nerdy joy.
It is.
It reminds me of listening to vinyl.
Oh, yeah?
You know, because like you play a video game and it's instant gratification,
mm-hmm.
Like putting on a MP3. But if you, you know, listen to vinyl, you get out your record player, you pull out the, you know, you have to set it up. It's very physical.
Yeah, there's
very intentional.
There's a certain amount of like ritual to it. There's a dedicated,
yes.
You know, it is not just random access. It is, you know, dedicated. There's almost like a commitment to getting it out and cleaning it off. And yeah.
100%. You know, and that's what playing a board game feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, setting it up and everything, it has a different vibe.
Yeah. This is the first time that I've done anything like this aside from my you know, homemade version of the Dark Souls board game. I'm not really a board game kind of guy. Don't really, you know, the most I've done is played games with Dennis and the Level folks mm-hmm. together. So this is new to me. This reminded me of sitting down and playing a game book, you know, like your like your Fabled Lands and such.
Very similar. Like you just sit down to have like an intentional little physical experience.
Mm-hmm.
it's refreshing.
Yeah.
And also, if people are hurt that we're not covering the Dark Souls board game, which I understand can be house ruled into being fun.
Yes.
This has tons in common with it. It is a simplified version. Mm-hmm. My main issue with the big thing this handles, that was my huge problem with the Dark Souls board game. So you get equipment semi-randomly. The Dark Souls board game, and the stat requirements are out of this fucking world.
Mm-hmm. You don't just have to grind to get the equipment. You have to grind to use the equipment. So in spirit, maybe that is kind of similar to the Dark Souls experience, but it is not fun in a board game.
They upped it so much. Like, just normal, like, long swords and stuff have, you know, there are very few weapons that are just, you're just able to use in the Dark Souls board game.
Mm-hmm.
So you just is constantly fucking up my reward centers. I would get rewarded with something I couldn't use and at random and just be fucked. Like, nobody in the party could use it. we put a lot. It was a very difficult encounter. We spent resources trying to get it, and it is useless. That is a really classic bad game feeling.
Yeah, you pulled the slot machine and you got something you couldn't use, which, because of the resources you expended, actually puts you behind the curve.
Yes, and it happens consistently.
Yeah,
in the board game, and the way that the card game handles that is by kind of making it instead of having stats, you pay with you know, mana. Essentially, like, you pay with resources.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no unusable equipment.
Right.
If you have the right hand, you can use anything. It might cost you more and it might, you know, do more damage to you, but you can use it.
Yeah.
You don't, there's a sense of impotence that is in the Dark Souls board game that is missing from the card game. That is the difference to me.
Yeah. My big problem with the Dark Souls card game, or the board game rather, and this is your complaint is right on. For me, additionally, it is both way too long and repetitive. And also, like, it's in this weird, uncanny valley. It's neither fish nor fowl. It feels not like a board game and not like a strategic tabletop game, but kind of like the most unwieldy aspects of both. And the level of abstraction in the deck building board game, while it is not as faithful of an adaptation of the video game, is actually a better experience while keeping the basic elements of what reminds, you know, of what reminds me about Dark Souls on this, the cyclical flavor nature. Yeah.
The flavor. And this better remind me of Dark Souls.
Yep.
It's the three things that I care about.
Yes. Does it is this a patty melt? Yeah. Yes. We're both in a cutthroat kitchen barrel right now.
I just watched the episode where the judges compete and my boy Simon Majumdar got eliminated right away, and it was sad. I love that big ropey beast. He looks like one of the gang beasts. I love him so much.
He's great. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just like, this feels just right. This is Goldilocks, as opposed to being kind of just in a negative space in between two things that could be good on their own.
And I want to just do a mild brake pump and say something where it's like, it's not like I've been playing this every day since I got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot better. It is mostly really good by comparison. In terms of a game, it's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm curious about the expansions. I could see playing them.
Yeah.
I could see busting this out, having some people over to play it.
Yeah.
But it's not, this isn't Gloomhaven. Like, this I don't like this as much as, like, Too Many Bones, which is my go-to tactical board game.
Yeah.
Right now. Like, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it does capture Dark Souls flavor pretty well.
What's weird about it to me is that, like, learning it was more fun than actually sitting down and playing it, you know? Which is usually the other way around, right? Like, learning is usually the price that you pay to get in and just kind of, like, you know, hum along, right? But, like, once I felt like I got it, I really felt like I got it. And it didn't feel like there was more for me to, like, kind of go after, right?
Well, I can't imagine. It's weird. So we'll talk about this when we talk about the mechanics. It is a deck building game, but it doesn't have as strong a every run is different.
Right.
Feeling to it. And there are a lot of principles of deck building you do not adhere to in this game, because they do some kind of cross mechanic stuff. So it does have a variety issue. I think that's probably why they, you know, released a couple expansions for it.
Yeah.
Because new bosses and new monsters and new encounters would make it feel different. Mm-hmm. And those are things I've been on the lookout for on sale just to kind of complete the collection.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I want to know how a pyromancer plays.
Yeah. I want to know, how do they do the moonlight butterfly? That's a weird ass encounter for them to adapt. Right.
Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff is catnip to me to see how, mediums transfer in games, mm-hmm. you know, but it does feel like it does have kind of limited staying power, you know, after I fought the bosses in it.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, and I didn't, it's also worth noting, it's hard and there's some RNG. It's not like I just like stomped every boss in it.
No. I failed a few times on the way to actually succeeding. Yeah.
Yeah. This is hard. So it is kind of a deck building game, kind of a roguelike game. It is constantly engaging with risk reward.
Yes.
Stuff, push your luck mechanics. That is the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the face of a ticking clock,
right?
Which is your bonfire. So you continue to do these encounters, building your deck. Your deck is also your hit points.
Yep.
And you keep getting rewards, and you get those once you kind of bank them.
Yeah.
At the bonfire, but you have limited rests.
Yeah, you only have five attempts to make this go.
Yep. And you do that trying to level up and make your deck better and get better equipment so you can face one of the bosses.
Right.
Or both the bosses, actually, is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Which is fucking wild. That's a lot.
At no point was I not limping across the finish line with those guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. So it's for up to four players, but you can play it by your lonesome. Each player takes a class. You get the knight, the assassin, the sorcerer, and the herald. Those are just like different decks that you get, and also your character that has their own stuff. We'll talk about that. There are variants. You can actually like mix up your starting deck with this as well. If you get bored of the basic class, but the starting characters make sense for what they have.
Yes. Yeah. You have weapons, armor, spells, different stamina types, different items, things like that.
Yeah.
In your deck. We'll talk about how that works. Stamina is the primary mechanic of this.
Yeah.
Each class also, what differentiates them is they have a taunt value, which if the enemy is aiming at an empty square, it determines who gets attacked.
Yeah.
So this is MMO stuff, basically. Like your big tanky character, your knight, has the highest taunt value because he's more likely to draw armor cards, so you want him to take the hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas your healer, you want to keep them around as long as possible. They're not necessarily more fragile. Like fragility is expressed weird in this. It took me a while. I had to read the rule book twice to say, like, okay, so like how much HP do these guys have? Like in my head, I couldn't initially realize, like, oh, your health is your deck. That felt weird to me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth a special demerit that the rule book is not written very well.
Yes.
In this game. And that's actually really common. As I've been playing more board games, like that happens constantly.
Yeah.
A weird thing is you just Google the question and thousands of other players will have the same question. So like when you're playing a board game, you want to have your computer right there because it will teach you how to play the board game better. And also, it's one of the rare times, like, you know, how we bemoan in video games, video examples are great for learning how to play a board game.
Yeah.
Like a text example I want in a game, to teach me an answer or something, but in a board game, like watching somebody set up and play it is the easiest way.
Yeah. Because I want to see the flow. I want to see like how the different phases work and like, honestly, to have the information pre-digested for me, because they probably have worked through the inconsistencies that I noticed and the rules as presented. Right.
Yep. Yep. Baby bird it to me.
Yes. I mean, and it's also like approximating the experience of, you know, sitting down with somebody who has already played that game. And they're like, okay, they're just explaining it. Like, that's the best way to learn one of these games.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
So each character, in addition to having a taunt value, they have a special ability. You tap it. You know, they flip over, they use it once per rest. Yeah. And let's talk about the different classes.
Yeah.
There.
I started out with the knight. That probably wasn't the best move, actually. mm-hmm. Just because of the way they kind of expect a party composition in this. The knight has the highest taunt value, and mm-hmm. their special ability gives you the chance, or gives you the ability to reduce attack damage by 3 once for free without spending any stamina. The special abilities kind of seem to be used for like are designed to be used in like clinches, you know, like yes. when this would be the difference between winning or losing an encounter.
And that goes into that kind of risk reward thing. Even the individual cards mm-hmm. have an element of that, which we'll talk about with their discard abilities.
Yeah.
Things you'll do in a clinch. One of the reasons why knight isn't good, it's worth noting that if you play solo, if you play this Morkul, mm-hmm. I recommend playing it 2-player solo, like give yourself 2 characters.
I eventually figured that out. I eventually did Assassin and Herald was my party, quote unquote, that I ran.
And that's a good combo. You can play with all 4 characters if you want.
It's just a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, a lot to keep track of. It takes longer, mm-hmm. but you'll have that D&D party.
And there's something that feels sadder about playing 2 hands by yourself than just playing the one by yourself.
I don't know what it does, but I feel like anybody who had like close circuit like video on me doing this, uh-huh. it's as sad as it can already get.
Oh, yeah.
Me and like my fucking busted ass boxers sitting at a card table that has all these claw marks on it. Uh-huh. Just like... removing my glasses to read the rule book, like holding it up to my face like Mr. Magoo. It's already one of the dorkier things that
I do change chairs at the table and put on a different hat and speak in a different accent.
There you go. That's how you trick the spies.
It's a different, completely different person. Okay, this guy's cool.
I solo the Dark Souls card game as an RP server. Ah, that's good for you, knight, but as an assassin, I'd prefer to backstab.
Yes, the souls will be mine.
Give me the souls. So the assassin gets a backstab, mm-hmm. Which is a free damage that ignores armor, which is really good.
Yes.
You also get an S-Doc, which is there are different weapon types. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Kukris, you can just use a Kukri.
Uh-huh.
Armor, and then being able to dodge, which is tied to cards. Not everyone can dodge.
Right.
So the knight blocks a lot of damage, has swords, and has armor. The assassin can dodge some stuff and does finesse damage, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the one character who has an attack that does a status effect in their base deck. The Kukri inflicts bleed. The sorcerer, you get 1 free spell attack, which is cool. Like, you can just ignore the cost on a spell. You also, your primary attack that you started with is soul arrows, which are powerful and ranged. Range works kind of weird in this, and that is pretty valuable, especially because of the sorcerer. You're going to want to have them starting in the back row.
Yeah, and it seems like that's obviously a big advantage, you know, because his HP, like when we talked about making characters fragile, the reason why the sorcerer is fragile is because you don't have defense cards. Mm-hmm. If something, you know, yes, you can stay in the back row, but if you get hit, you're getting hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really, the best thing you have is like an expensive dodge, on your cloak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Herald, has very low taunt because you want to keep him alive. You get a free 3 HP heal, which is really good. And then a talisman that does a heal or, can defend against a couple, hit points of damage. Mm-hmm. Healing is really big.
Yes.
In this game, because it allows you to spend more time between bonfires, get some of your cards back.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Weirdly, healing is the same as treasures that allow you to do search. Mm-hmm. Those are effectively the same thing, which is to pull cards off the bottom of your discard and put them on the bottom of your deck that you draw from.
Your main deck.
Yeah.
So your cards are your hit points in this. You're constantly discarding cards, which we'll talk about how you do this. But when you get hurt, when you use items, you're discarding cards. When you discard all your cards, you automatically go back to the bonfire. So you can choose to do that as well, but you automatically shunt back.
Yes. If one character dies, then everybody goes back to the bonfire and it ticks down.
Yep. Yeah. When you take damage, you discard cards, either from your deck or from your hand. as you choose, unless you have a way to avoid it with a card. And when you the base mechanic of this game is to perform actions, to perform attacks and defenses and the like, you spend stamina cards. So you have a sword. The sword has different abilities. It says attack and reuse this for this much damage. It costs one strength stamina and one faith stamina to do that. So to do that, you discard those two cards. It costs you a little bit of life to do that attack.
Yeah. And the variety of stamina is, you know, kind of one of the wild cards in this. You're going to be designing your deck based around not just what attacks you have, but kind of a ratio of the kinds of stamina that you're going to be able to pull from. The knight doesn't really have an awful lot of use for like the intelligence stamina, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could find an item that, and this is one of the weird ways that I think it emulates Dark Souls pretty well, is you can find an item that you maybe want to use that takes a lot of intelligence stamina, but you have to build your deck around it. And there's nothing stopping you from doing it. You know, your base deck isn't based around it, but you can spec for that.
Yes. Over the different cycles that you do. So as you are doing this, you spend stamina to use it to perform your actions. There are two different kinds of action per card. There are quick actions and there are standard ones. Now, quick ones let you keep the card in your hand, like you can use it multiple times, whereas a standard action might be more effective, but you discard that card along with your use. So
or cheaper.
Yes.
Like, you know, so it, on that sword I mentioned, it might take two stamina to use the sword and keep it, but only one to use the sword and pitch it.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's an interesting choice is because you don't know whether you're going to draw another weapon. You know, you can end up with, you know, outside of the first hand of the game where you can mulligan, you can end up with just no weapons in your hand and not being able to do anything. So that's where the kind of deck building strategy from this comes from.
Yes. Yeah. Quick actions are either less effective or they end up costing more. You can recover your discarded cards, like we said, with healing or with search. Those are relatively rare outside of the Herald.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there are some items that do it. You always draw up to six cards. Six is the number. And if you can't draw any more cards, that's when your run ends.
Yeah. And six cards, like it's weirdly limited in feels in a very intentional way. So, you know, picture this, you've got, you know, one kind of weapon and that might take three stamina, right? You know, you only have so many chances in your, you know, in your six, you know, out of the five remaining that any of those will be the stamina that you need. So when you're doing an attack, you're off, you know, you're going to be using a pretty large amount of your hand, and getting, you know, and pulling new stuff back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, I mean, it's the game pretty well, you know, using resources to get through these encounters.
Yeah.
So there are two campaigns you can do. These are ways you set up your little exploration board. So these have little encounter spaces where you can put your encounter cards that have and two bosses you have to do with a bonfire at the center. These are connected by lines, and you can only move between these different lines to different encounter kind of strengths.
Yes.
So you go to a level one encounter, you draw a random level one encounter card, and that determines what you do.
Right. When we say encounter cards, like this actually defines a space. So this is like you moving into a different chamber in a dungeon, although they're pulled from all over the world of Dark Souls 3, which is fun.
Well, it is collapsing.
Well, you know, yeah, so you see
spaces.
But the encounter card, what that lays out, is, how many of each difficulty of enemy you're going to draw and put on the board, and how much treasure you're going to get at the end. What's cool about this and, you know, the way that it adjusts for different numbers of players is that, depending on the party size, it changes the number of, enemies that are drawn. And also it changes the amount of HP the bosses have.
Yeah. Yeah. Very standard, board game stuff, but works real well here in terms of this. Once you defeat an encounter, that encounter is done. So you can move through that space. Until you rest.
Yes.
So you can move back and forth similar to Dark Souls. When you rest, they respawn. you know, similar to Dark Souls.
Yeah. Those exact enemies don't respawn. It just pulls the that same variety of enemy difficulties from that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So these things form encounters. The way the encounters work is you have two different 2x3 grids, a front row and a back row with three columns. You set up an enemy side and a player side.
Yeah. I felt weirdly prepared for this because I had played Inscription a little bit before this.
Oh.
Yeah. And Inscription is kind of similar to this. It has kind of the same formation. That's 4x2, but it is, you know, yeah, like
a similar kind of zone.
Yeah. The similar things.
Yeah. You draw your enemies according to what strength they have. And on the enemy card, it has all the information about what they do. So it will tell you where to place them there and what they do and their stats and what their action is. They will have health, the amount of damage they do, armor, and then they will have a weakness here sometimes. The way weakness works is if you attack with the correct attack thing, you ignore their armor.
Yeah.
Armor just subtracts from damage. You know, very intuitively, weaknesses end up being hugely important.
Yes.
With this, because your base level attacks are not designed necessarily to one shot low level enemies without a weakness.
Yeah. And remember, you know, the enemy does the same attack over and over again, but it can be a pretty big deal for you. Right. So you want to minimize the number of turns that you are in combat with them.
Yes. And they always go first as well. So you're going to take those hits.
Mm-hmm.
They also will have a little box, a little text box with special rules.
Yeah.
You know? So the basic skeleton, for example, you have to defeat him twice.
Yeah.
He reanimates once.
Yeah. Some of the like the weird little assassin guys will have invisibility. So like you can't attack them if there's another visible person on the board. And then most devastating is the double strike. God.
Yeah.
That really sucks.
That is really rough.
Yeah. So enemies, like you said, they activate first and then they perform their one attack. And each enemy's attack will affect a different portion of the board, a different portion of the player character formation. Right. So this will be an attack that, you know, hits the front right row or the back left row, or sometimes it'll be like an area of effect.
Mm-hmm. And they have different rules for those things. If it targets an individual node, then it will hit, and even if it misses, there's no hero in that node, it will eventually hit a hero.
Yeah.
Through this kind of logic, it goes to somebody else in the row with the highest taunt, then goes to the next row with the highest taunt. This is the biggest thing that the reason why you want to play as two characters, even if you're playing solo, because otherwise one character just absorbs all the damage.
All of it. It's kind of wild, actually.
Yeah, it's too much. The house rule I've seen most common is if you're playing with one hero, attacks miss.
Yeah.
Like if you're not in that place, I could see that making it too easy as well.
Yeah. I would almost want to do it like it won't go between rows. Like, you know, columns will be one thing, but rows will be different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something in there.
Yeah.
There's some way to make it work a little bit better as it is.
Yeah.
AoEs work differently. They do miss. So if somebody does an AoE and you're not in that spot, it doesn't follow that logic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you get attacked, this is where you have to use a card, to either armor or dodge.
Yeah.
This kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. You can decide to do nothing and then just take the full brunt of the attack.
Yeah.
But this is your opportunity to spend some stamina to do that. So like the armor will just reduce the amount of damage that you take, whereas the dodge, which is really powerful, will let you avoid the attack entirely.
Yes. In addition to AoE, enemy attacks will have different kind of effects. So they can either do at range, they can shift you or push you over, reposition you, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, disrupt your plans, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then status effects, you or the enemy get, generally you take damage on doing certain things.
Yeah.
So like you get a status effect that's like when you take damage, you take more damage, or when you move, you take damage, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest one for me was stagger, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a real bummer. That causes you to take damage upon performing an attack. which might be the difference between if you can take an enemy out or not. And you are, again, putting that into your risk reward. Do I skip this to lose the stagger token, or do I attack through it and hope that it ends the turn?
It also, another kind of very Dark Souls thing is the enemies living by the same rules.
Yeah.
So like, the last time I played a game this morning, and picked up a mace, like, mm-hmm. very early on, which has stagger.
Yeah.
So it's very powerful against enemies, since enemies go first and they take their damage before they do their, like, as they do their attack,
mm-hmm.
there. So it ended up being very, very useful.
Yeah.
So not to be underestimated.
Not at all. Yeah. No. So the players go second. You draw up to six, just to cover for any reaction that you may have done before. And unless otherwise noted, so this is where the rows and the columns come into effect. You can only attack an enemy who is right in front of you, and is at the front of their column in the formation.
Yes. Unless you have range.
Yes.
Through there. You can do a couple other things other than attack. You get one move. So you can, mm-hmm. move one space. You can use one item there. So there are things like grass.
Yeah.
You know, things like that that will have different effects. And then you can discard cards and draw cards at will.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds really powerful, but it's not, because you're basically shedding hit points.
Yep.
But you would do this because you have an attack in your hand that you need to use to end the encounter.
Yes.
Or you'll take more damage.
Yeah. So get rid of useless stamina now, hoping maybe there will be an item or a heal later on down the line. Or you're going to get it back on a rest. You know, you're not going to be finishing the campaign on your first bonfire go.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a handful of shields.
Yes.
No good. attacks go back and forth until one side is dead.
Yeah.
And if you lose, you go to the bonfire. If you win, you get souls for the enemies. It shows on their card how many souls. And then treasure that is, and souls that are shown on the card, the encounter card,
mm-hmm.
There. And this goes into a loot pile.
Yeah.
You don't get this. You have to go to your bonfire to gain it.
Right. So this is...
To bank it.
Yeah. So it needs to be banked. So if you die with anything in your loot pile, then that, mm-hmm. it just gets shuffled back into the treasure deck. And it is lost, probably not to be gotten again on this run, because there is the loot deck is actually really big. There are a lot, mm-hmm. of items you can potentially pull from. When you rest, that is moved over into your inventory, and characters do not have their own inventory. Like, you have your own deck. Everybody has access to that same shared pool. So like when you're resting at the bonfire, you can kind of like trade and mix and match at that point.
Yes. Let's talk about the bonfire.
Let's do.
So you have this inventory bit. The bonfire, there are five levels of bonfire. Every time you rest, you flip it over to the next one. It raises the number of cards you can have in your deck, essentially simulating leveling up,
mm-hmm.
because you can have more hit points, and gives you a one-time effect that's very generous. So like gives you an item, gives you souls, gives you a transposed item, which is a high level treasure.
Yeah.
And you shuffle all your discards back into your deck.
Yeah.
This is all, very good, but it's limited. You have five chances, mm-hmm. at this.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of strategy in choosing that. The biggest thing you can do is you can, look through and buy, this is where you improve your deck,
yeah.
And buy things. You have souls and you buy better staminas, either staminas that have two for ones, like you get two for each card, or ones that give you a choice,
mm-hmm.
Between two different staminas. So they're more valuable. You basically make it more likely to be able to play your cards.
Yes. These are really powerful. You buy these from the hilariously named Stamina Marketplace, which sounds like, yes. a new competitor for Planet Fitness.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I was going to pop over to the Stamina Marketplace before work and get a couple of reps in.
Dark Souls voice. Pops up in the font. The Stamina Marketplace. Damn it, Elden Ring.
but this is a big deal. That's kind of the cycle for this. You want to get as much of the stamina as you can, And because mm-hmm. you have the five, you know, the five attempts and the cap goes up, you don't really want to rush towards the bosses, right? Like on both of these campaigns, there's an obviously easier boss. There's an obviously a more difficult boss. If you show up at the more difficult boss when you're not on the last phase of the bonfire, you're leaving an advantage on the table.
Yeah, you're likely to lose.
Yeah.
Because the game is balanced for narrow victories.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a mechanic called Remnants of Humanity. These are cards that you can have to fill up your deck to the maximum.
Yeah.
So if you don't have enough stamina, all these do is replace themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so they're essentially like, yes, they can be discarded for health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but other than that, though, they don't do anything other than just allow you to draw a card.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
They're not great cards to own. They're not super useful, but they can function as hit points.
Yeah. If you're playing the game by yourself or with like only one other person or duo soloing or whatever you want to call that move that I talked about, changing hats and accents, then you're mm-hmm. likely not to need to rely on the Remnants of Humanity. That kind of seems more like a concession for larger parties that might not have gotten through enough encounters to fill out their loot. To match the new cap.
And these bosses, they're two per campaign, and they basically shape what you do. They're paired together, so it's not random. It's like one side of the board is Vort and Sullivan, and one side of the board is Abyss Watcher and Wolnir.
Mm-hmm.
And so you choose one of those two campaigns. Bosses stay dead. So once you beat the weaker boss, it does stay dead. You don't have to like go back and do anything
mm-hmm.
for it.
Yeah.
Between camp. And the bosses are tough and have these behavior decks. This is something on loan from the Dark Souls board game. And the most successful part of the Dark Souls board game.
Yeah, I was gonna say if they were going to take anything from that, it should have been this. The fact that this is like randomized at first, but it falls into a pattern that you can predict. And also you can just kind of know like the possibilities of what may be coming up. You can kind of anticipate. And so it approximates learning the bosses.
Really clever.
Yeah.
Like this was the mechanic I read about with the Dark Souls board game that made me excited
mm-hmm.
before I actually played it. Like this is a neat idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So the bosses just run through these behavior decks that they have. They're programmed. Basically it's random again at first and you can memorize it. And they're all a little bit different.
Yeah.
So Vort, the first boss they recommend you fight.
Mm-hmm.
He is a phase boss. He has a second phase, that he goes through. And he does frostbite attacks, in AoEs.
Yeah. At the start of your turn or at the start of one of your turns, his first phase has a blanket effect where anybody in the front row gets frostbite. Which means mm-hmm. that if you move at all, you take damage. He, you know, like out of the bosses, him and Sullivan are both, you know, like one size characters, I guess. They're mm-hmm. very mobile. So trying to keep up with him and getting in position to deal damage will necessarily involve some kind of damage cost for you. So, you know, you're going to be burning through your deck here.
Yes. Sullivan, who is the boss of that side, has a clone version that he switches to, each five wounds. So, you know, similar to the real Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, he's pretty standard.
Yeah.
He just swaps back and forth between these two modes.
Yeah. It's a real, endurance run, kind of deal.
Yeah.
And something that it should be, you know, it's important to note is that between phases, rollover damage doesn't accrue. So like if, you know, one phase of Sullivan has, you know, one HP left and you somehow end up doing an attack that, you know, does three or four. No, only that one will count. The next phase will start with whatever he had left.
Yes. Yeah. So you want to take that into account when you're spending your resources.
Yeah.
The other side of the board, we got the Abyss Watchers as the early boss. There. This is really overwhelming. To me, I found this harder than Wolnir.
It's when wild. I played
through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no safe spot. Like until you deal with at least one of these, one of those undead legionnaires. So there's the Abyss Watcher and then he has two legionnaires with him and those legionnaires will attack at the same time. Basically approximating an area of effect, kind of attack, at the beginning of each turn.
Yes. And as he gets, you know, tougher after you defeat the Legionnaires, he basically hits everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's real frustrating.
Yeah. So this is difficult. This is wildly hard if you're doing it with just one character. This is what made me decide to start two styling it.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Yeah. And then I had much better luck with Wulnir, who's the end boss of that side. Just mostly due to positioning. Like bosses that do AoEs, I found a lot easier because you can attack and then move into a space I knew he was going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
Like just being able to miss.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah. Weirdly, I think Wulnir works better in this than he does in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't feel like just like a weird gimmick boss.
Uh-huh.
So much.
Yeah. But this feels like a very faithful adaptation of him. So Wulnir kind of stays in the back center and you don't do damage to him. He just kind of stays back there. Instead, each of his behavior cards, as it flips, moves his two hands into different positions. You attack the hands and deal damage to the hands. The idea being that if they're in the back row, you can only hit them with a ranged. It's a way. So there may be rounds where you're just kind of like getting set back up for whatever is coming next. But it is the hands that you are going after, just like in the game. Although in the game it's the bracelets. Weirdly,
similar at least here. And then that's the game.
Yeah.
As it exists, there are a couple expansions that have come out. Seekers of Humanity, which adds invasion and also adds two classes, but I couldn't find which classes they are.
Same.
Yeah, it doesn't say on their website.
Yeah.
When you look at like what's included, it does say there are two class cards.
Oh, huh.
So.
Yeah. I was able to see for the other one, the Forgotten Paths, which feels way more substantial. It adds four new bosses. There are traps and there are two character classes, the Thief and the Pyromancer. And I can see like with all of this together with the new, the new kinds of encounters, this being a really like big and very like these expansions would shore up the variety problem for me. It seems
Yeah, that being the biggest problem, probably with the game, other than the fact that, again, it's not incredible or anything. It's like pretty fun.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure that we're not overselling it because it is good. But it's, I could also see there are better solo tactical board games.
Yeah, I would. I haven't played them, but I would agree probably. And for me, like, I don't know if I'm hungry for this kind of play. Honestly, I'm going to sit down and play Monster Train any number of other like digitized ones. I'm not as big of a sucker for the vinyl appeal of sitting down laying this out on a table, and that's just that's just a preference thing. Also, that is a two cats who don't understand boundaries thing.
Yeah. You have to have kind of a dedicated space. My dream is to someday have like live in a place where I can have just a table.
Yeah.
Set up like cats stay out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's good. And it's a clever adaptation of something that I feel might be fundamentally misguided to adapt.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like the game, the computerization, I don't know. It feels like the stuff that is special about Dark Souls is in the hands and is on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like taking away, like, we talk a lot about, what the central appeal of Dark Souls is and ways that we generally think, internet strangers get it wrong.
Right.
And one of the things we talk about how is that it's not just, the action.
Yeah.
Like it's not just action and reflex and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These take away that, like, you do not dodge. It's not skill based. Mm-hmm. Like the skill is in tactics and in building your deck, but there's also a lot of RNG, which is contrary to Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
But it not only does it take away that thing that internet strangers are wrong about, it also takes away the thing that we love about Dark Souls,
spaces.
Which is atmosphere and exploration and story and stuff like that. So it ends up being kind of a that's why I've been trying to like pump the brakes a little bit on the praise.
Yeah.
Because it's good, but it's not, it might be as good as it can be.
Yeah.
Without being incredible, you know, without being an actually like anything that really captures what Dark Souls is like. Like, it's a really admirable attempt, but I don't know if that's a misguided thing.
Yeah. If you go further towards, you know, trying to get some of those mechanical things into this, you get the Dark Souls board game, you know, which we've outlined why that doesn't necessarily work for us. And if you lean, you know, into the story side of things, you get like a, you know, either a book, like a source book that you want to read, or a tabletop game. Steamforge has actually announced that they're working on a Dark Souls like actual like role playing game, you know, D&D style tabletop storytelling kind of deal. I've not seen that they do any of that other, like, I don't think there's anything else in their catalog that is like that. So I am,
that is an art. Yeah.
Yeah. I am hesitant, just because of some of the mechanical swings that they decided to take here, you know, and in the board game. I don't know that I am necessary. Again, I don't trust them on site, which is a bit of a bummer because they also have licenses for like a Resident Evil board game and the Horizon Zero Dawn board game, things that could possibly be cool, but I don't know that they have the instinct for it, I guess, for my taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also something where that play space, the two things that I want to know that real quick, the quick one is I have the Resident Evil 2 board game.
Oh, yeah.
I bought that, you know, and I have not played it yet, but I'm really curious about it. Mm-hmm. So I could see that being very cool, like the Nemesis.
Yeah.
Stalking stuff. Like, I hope that's really good. Or not, Mr. X.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the play space of tabletop RPGs that try to emulate Dark Souls is actually not crowded, but it there's stuff there.
Yeah.
You know, there are several games that kind of take a Dark Souls feeling to it. The names of which right now are escaping me because I'm bad at remembering names, but Levi, the other DM in my group, has run several things. Yeah. One's called like something of the Demon Lord. Okay. And they kind of like try to emulate this Dark Souls feeling, and they do a pretty good job of it, actually. So there's already kind of stiff competition.
Yeah.
In getting that Dark Souls vibe in a tabletop. I also think though that a tabletop game has a better chance to succeed because the mechanics, you know, the reflex based mechanics will never come across on the board game. But, you know, a good DM could possibly take the vibe.
I'm just picturing you open up the box and it's just a dagger in the box. Like, good luck, bud.
Yeah. Figure it out.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the pendant. But like, I could see, you know, the same way when we cover the Dark Souls comic, and there's that one story about the Labyrinth City.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like if I was playing with a DM and they came up with that and it was a Dark Souls esque world, like I'd be satisfied.
Yeah.
You know,
that's one of those things about a tabletop system, or, you know, just like a tabletop attempt to recapture Dark Souls in any system, which is it's going to live and die in the DM. And how they set the scene, the scenarios that are put forward, you know, if there are modules, what the DM decides to stick to in that and how the DM decides to diverge, you know, in order to keep things fun at the table. There's just so much more discretion that is that is afforded in the tabletop kind of space that is, you know, not captured in anything that is, you know, strictly rules based, like a, you know, quote unquote board game or a card game.
Yes.
Right. I think that gets at more of the ineffables.
One thing I want to mention too, or something about that tabletop game, like I'm also a little skeptical and hopeful. It's a day one purchase for me though. Like as somebody who likes seeing how games are adapted, like I got to read a stat block.
Yeah.
On, you know, the Taurus Demon or whatever. That's my shit.
Yep.
Like a couple of people have done mock-ups of Magic the Gathering sets based on Dark Souls. And though that's some of my, like, I want to say guilty reading. It's not guilty. That's me drifting off into sleep, just absolutely beaming, like looking at my phone material.
Yeah.
Like I'm a pig in shit with that stuff. So I will buy the shit out of this and any expansions just to see how they do it, even if it is trash.
Same. You know,
my curiosity is really high.
But I also bought all of like the tabletop EverQuest adaptations. It was a terrible game. Yeah. but I wanted to see like how they took the spaces and how they took the enemies, get that stat block, get those movesets, get like weird unofficial lore that is, you know, not from the, not from the developers, but it just kind of pulled through because they needed content to fill out this entry in this monster manual, you know?
Yes.
You know, the intersection between Dark Souls and reading a source book for a game I'm never going to play is basically, you know, a circle for me. So this is also going to be a day one purchase, which I probably shouldn't say to them, so they have motivation to sell it to me.
This is, or give us a copy.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Hey, me and Jeremy got a copy of that X-Men board game. It's not very good.
Hey, Steamforge, I know we said we talked a bunch of shit about your board game. Money, please. No,
free, yeah, money, please.
free game, please.
Object, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does it say about us that I feel like you and I both are on the vanguard of the source book being the ultimate apotheosis of media?
I don't know.
Like, is there anything better than a source book?
No, not really.
Like, it's what I want for everything.
It's just like, it's, I don't know. You get a bunch of ingredients. It's loose story bits. It's a kit, you know, it's like yeah. like a hobby kit or a model kit, you know, but for fictional settings. And for game stuff, right? Like you envision the trade-offs that would be made in play based on the scenarios that are put forward in them. I fucking love them. I don't know. I will always be down for a source book. I'm always working my way through one.
I'm not gonna, you know, somebody should like make fun of me and yell at me and stuff if I were like, I like source books more than I like novel books. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say that they're easier, and I'm gonna say that like in terms of just kind of what feels good to just grab off the shelf and read, it is, and it, what I end up wishing things were.
Yeah.
Like there are more games or TV shows or things that I just want a source book of than I just want a novel of.
Yeah.
Or like, I'd rather have be a movie or whatever.
It's like source books are portable. It feels like to me, you know, like source books generally live on my coffee table. And if I have like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, I will sit down and just like, you know, read an entry for something or like look through a stat block or go to the appendix and flip around, you know, where, you know, as opposed to like a novel, there's a certain amount of every time you pick it up, there is the friction of getting back into it, remembering what had happened, you know, et cetera, that is not there. It's kind of like halfway between reading a magazine and reading a novel. And I think that is a really good sweet spot.
Yeah, me too. I love it. It's a yeah.
Yep.
So viva la sourcebook. Let's talk about what we're doing after this, because it's exciting stuff.
It is. So the next episode, we're going to be doing something that when you pitched it to me, Gary, you said, hey, it's, you know, pretty radical. But also it is it makes perfect sense. We're going to be doing the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, it is a game that is not listed as an influence on Dark Souls, but a lot of people who talk about that kind of secret having element of Dark Souls, that mystery and stuff, cite The Legend of Zelda 1 as one of the first examples of that, that they played. Like, obviously there are secrets in like Atari's Adventure or some shit, but what kind of masochist are we? Yeah, so we're going to talk about Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, and the original Zelda as the proximate influence on all action RPGs, which Souls games are, you know, kind of the modern example of, right?
Yes.
So it'll be neat to kind of go to that and try and draw any links. You know, remember that we have talked about 3D Game Heroes, which is mechanically similar.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after that, because we're coming up on Elden Ring. It's coming. After that, we're going to do a couple episodes on Returnal.
Yeah. New game. Had a lot of Game of the Year heat last year. Kind of a killer app for the PlayStation 5. It's like a roguelike shooter. It's like a 3D shoot 'em up is the way that it felt when I played it.
And has been compared to Dark Souls as well. You know, back and forth. We're going to talk about that. Apparently, it has a lot more kind of thematic depth that you might expect. I imagine where that's some of the tie-ins happen. I'm excited to have a chance to play it.
Me too.
And it is, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, we're in a weird gulf where like the Souls likes that are on offer just don't sound particularly good to me right now. Running out of gas for that. So Elden Ring needs to show up and rescue us from that.
It is. Yeah. So one episode on Zelda and then two about Returnal, and then Elden Ring is right here. waiting for us when we get to the other side of that. It's exciting.
Yeah. The it's a so no also when we get to Elden Ring, we're gonna take that at kind of a slow pace.
Yes.
You know? Something that happened, I anticipate we'll be asked about this, so I'm gonna try to head it off. When we did Sekiro, some people complained about us not having off week episodes.
Yeah.
Because we used to do that during Bonfireside Chat. We did those were appendix episodes. Mm-hmm. Those were people's response episodes to things. It being a patron show, that may or may not work. During Sekiro, we started doing some kind of special one-off things.
Mm-hmm.
Us going into Elden Ring blind, I have no idea what we'll be able to do. It might just be a thing where the show is fortnightly, mm-hmm. and I know that will disappoint some people.
Yeah.
That was always what Bonfireside Chat was.
Yes.
The appendix episodes were there just to give people a chance to air their thoughts, but it was mm-hmm. never meant to be a full episode.
Right.
You know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know what we'll do. We have to manage what we can actually manage.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Because as much as there are people who listen to the network and they only listen to Bonfireside Chat, there are also people who are the opposite, and we are serving both audiences.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah. So, you know, part of the remit of the rekindled version of the show is that we do, kind of play it by ear to a certain degree, a little bit less, a little bit less rigid. We're going to see what the workload will bear and what the content necessitates. Let's say that will be, those will be the two main factors that we consider.
Yeah. Yeah. So stay tuned. You know, and bear with us while we figure it out, because part of us wanting to give ourselves the fresh Elden Ring experience means we have not spoiled ourselves on that at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from software games, there aren't very many of them. I don't want to blow one on hype.
Yep.
You know, so.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, not that I can think of. Thank you, everybody. This is the first episode that we're recording in the new year. Duckstream was a big success. So everybody who watched that and gave, we really appreciate it. I think that's a big one. But otherwise, you've already backed us. Stick around for the next one. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Umbasa.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.